Dear brothers and sisters, I want to think this morning about that woman that we have read about in Luke chapter 7, who came before Jesus to anoint his feet with ointment. She's a strange mixture, really, this woman. If you'd like to turn to Luke chapter 7, we see from verse 37 of Luke 7 that this woman, the woman of the city, was a sinner. That is what is stated about her. There's no doubt about it. She was a sinner. Jesus, in verse 47, confirms that. Her sins, which are many, he says. And yet, we also learn from verse 47 that she loved much. It's a strange mixture, isn't it? She was a sinner, and yet it says she loved much. Now, these things were obvious in this woman, and I'd like us to apply that to ourselves. Just looking at John's Gospel a second, John's Gospel chapter 13. Verse 34. A new commandment, says Jesus, I give unto you, that you love one another as I have loved you, that you also love one another. By this, he says, shall all men know that you are my disciples, if you have love one towards another. So, from what Jesus is saying there, we can see, can't we, that love, first of all, is a commandment for us. It's something we are commanded to do. And so, the first question then is, we must ask ourselves this morning, is are we obedient to that commandment? Does our love shine forth so that all men know that we are Jesus' disciples? And if that love doesn't shine forth from us, we must ask ourselves, why not? Why not? Why isn't it? Is Jesus asking us the impossible, brethren and sisters, when he gives us this commandment? First letter of John, I think, provides an answer. First letter of John, chapter 5, and verse 3. For this is the love of God, that we keep his commandments, it says, and his commandments are not grievous. It is not difficult, brethren and sisters, to manifest this one commandment, that we should love one another. It's not something hard to do. It's not something horrible that you have to attempt to do, is it? It's something that we should rejoice in the opportunity that we have of obeying this commandment. And we should do it with willing hearts. And if we do it, Jesus says, it will be manifest. It will be known. People will see and they will say, that man is a Christian. He is a Christadelphian. He is a follower of Christ. And all men will know that we are his disciples, and they will know that we are a different people. But the same is true the other way around. If you look at Galatians chapter 5, Galatians chapter 5 and verse 19, talks about the works of the flesh. And it says that the works of the flesh are manifest, which are these, and he lists them. And again, brothers and sisters, we must look at this and say, if we live lives that manifest the work of the flesh, we needn't kid ourselves. People will know. It says that they're manifest. If we are people that manifest hatred, variance, strife, if we are quarrelsome, all those other things that he talks about there, if we are envious, these things that we think we keep within ourselves and nobody else knows about, brothers and sisters, it becomes obvious. People will see, people will know, and we don't do ourselves any good by thinking that they don't know. I should just think about a parable that the Lord gives in Matthew chapter 13. It's a parable about the wheat and the tares. Matthew chapter 13 and verse 41. We want to really come in before that, don't we? It's the parable about the tares which come in the verse 39. Verse 38 for correction. The field is the world, as he gives the interpretation of it, the good seed of the children of the kingdom, the tares of the children of the wicked. And we know the story, how that in the end the tares are taken out and they are burnt. But those tares become manifest. Then appeared the tares, are the words that we have. I've heard explanations of this parable sometimes when people say that, you couldn't pull up the tares first, because if you pull up the tares, the roots are so entwined with the wheat that it'll pull out the wheats as well. And in any case, at that early stage, you can't tell the difference. I don't think that's right, brothers and sisters. I don't think it's right that you can't tell the difference. And that's not the reason that Jesus gives, is it? He says that then appeared the tares. And the tares are manifest. That word appeared there in the Greek is the word phaino. And perhaps older Christadelphians will remember a word phanerosis, which means to be made manifest. So these tares were recognizable as tares. The reason for pulling them out, or for not pulling them out rather, wasn't that you couldn't tell the difference, but that the roots were so twined together that you could pull out wheat as well if you did. But tares are glaringly obvious. That's the picture that we get. And not only so, there is a terrible warning that comes at the end of that, which says that those tares are going to be burned when the Lord comes in his kingdom. Well, we don't want to be tares, brothers and sisters, do we? We don't want to manifest works of the flesh. But we do want our love to shine forth. And a thought about that. Sometimes we hear brethren and sisters complaining about other brethren and sisters of lack of consideration, lack of love, things are not what they think they ought to be. And of course they're not what they ought to be, because we're all human. And it is very dangerous when we start complaining about one another in that way. Is this us? Do we look at other brethren and sisters and complain that they are not showing much love to me? See, brothers and sisters, there is a danger in our life, especially sometimes when we go through the mill, and yes, we do have problems, but we can get consumed by self-pity. And that is not good. We hear sometimes people demanding an apology, and there's been an issue of some sort, and someone's feeling very peeved or very hurt, and they say, I've been treated badly, I demand an apology from brother so-and-so. Heard that sometimes. See, brothers and sisters, we're not here to demand love. We're here to give it. As followers of Jesus, we're here to give it, not demand it. And this business of self-pity we want to be very careful of, because it can consume us, and we can start thinking that life is not fair to me. Oh, poor, poor me. And it sounds funny when you say it, but we can get into that frame of mind. And it leads to resentment, it leads to bitterness, it leads to whispering, and all those things that the proverb says separateth between very friends. Brothers and sisters, we must take a check on ourselves about these things, and just have that positive approach to one another. I know there are problems, I know there are wrinkles and faults. They are there. And we don't say ignore them, we say be aware of them and help where you can. That's surely the right thing to do. Jesus was like that. The woman was a sinner. He says she is a sinner. She has many sins. But he looked at it from a positive aspect and was able to help. And that's how we've got to be, brothers and sisters. I believe that that is the teaching of the Word. And if we do find from time to time, as we well might, that this attitude of mind can take a hold of us, there is an answer to it. And that is, of course, that we just look around our brothers and sisters and we note their problems. We take notice of their difficulties and we become concerned about that and put ourselves and our own problems to the background. That's what the Master did. That's what the Lord Jesus did. And we see many, many examples of that as we read through the Gospels, don't we? Going back to Luke then, but just coming in a little earlier now, Luke chapter 6. Verse 32 of Luke 6. If you love them which love you, what thank have ye? For sinners also love those that love them. And if you do good to them which do good to you, what thank have ye? The sinners also do even the same. So, here is the case of people who may love because they want it returned to them. They're doing it to get something back. We shouldn't be like that, brothers and sisters, should we? We should be hoping for nothing in return. This should be a free will offering by us. We come in our day, brothers and sisters, we don't bring a lamb or something out of the farmyard or something to sacrifice in that sense. But we do make free will offerings. I hope we do. And we bring these offerings freely. We don't expect anything back for it at all. It is what we do with pleasure for one another. Verse 35 tells us that. But love ye your enemies, and do good and lend, hoping for nothing again. And your reward shall be great. And you will be called the children of the highest because you're acting like the highest if you do that. verse 38. Give, and it shall be given unto you. Good measure, pressed down and shaken together and running over, shall men give into your bosom. For with the same measure that ye meet withal, it shall be measured to you again. But we don't want it back now. We want it back when the Lord returns with our reward from heaven. Because that is our hope, brothers and sisters, isn't it? That's when we want our reward, is when the Lord comes back. And so we lay up treasure in heaven. And is this perhaps what happened to the woman in Luke chapter 7? Just turn the page to that incident again now. Verse 37, we read, Behold, a woman in the city, which was a sinner, when she knew that Jesus sat at meat with the Pharisees' house, brought an alabaster box of ointment. And she came there, and she stood weeping, and began to wash his feet with tears, and did wipe them with the hairs of her head, and kissed his feet, and anointed them with ointment. And here was a woman then, who was a sinner, yes she was, admitted all hands down, and confessed she was a sinner. We don't know what the sins were, but obviously they were sins that everybody else knew about, because the Pharisees said, doesn't he realise what sort of a woman this is? So it would seem she didn't have a very good character. Certainly didn't have a very good reputation, did she? But here she comes to Jesus, and she has a free will offering. And it's ointment. And she wants to anoint his feet with this ointment. Brothers and sisters, if we can picture this woman coming, and perhaps the state of her mind, because if everybody else knew that she was a sinner, you can be sure she knew she was a sinner. And she comes with this ointment, and she wants to pay her respects. She wants to do what she could. And she comes before Jesus. And she wants to do this, and she bends down, and the ointment comes out, and she opens the box, and you get the picture of it. But inside her, it's welling up. And she is so sorry for what she's done, whatever it might have been. And she's eaten up with this, so much so that she can't stop herself, but she starts to cry. That's the situation. And here she is weeping. You can imagine her trying to fight back the tears as she thinks about what she's done, the sort of life she's led. And there's nothing much she can do about it. And the tears well up and she can't stop them. Then they plop down. And they plop onto the feet of Jesus. She'd come to anoint them with oil, but she can't help herself, and the tears come down and they wet the feet. That's what the Revised Version says. Not washed his feet, but wetted his feet. I don't think she intended to do that. I don't think she came there with the intention, I'm going to cry all over his feet. I don't think she came there with that intention. But this is what happened. And if you or I, brothers and sisters, were to come before the Lord's feet in that way, and we were full of things that we would much rather forget, but knew in our hearts and had to confess them, maybe the tears would well up in our eyes also, and we would be eaten up with sorrow and wet the Master's feet. And what's she going to do? Here she's making a mess of it. She'd come here to try to do something and anoint the feet of Jesus, and already she's blurting out all over the place, and what can she do? She hasn't got a towel or a handkerchief so she wipes his feet with the hairs of her head. It's the only thing that there is to hand. She tries to make amends. We're like that, aren't we? We do things sometimes. We intend to do the right thing, and we go and put our foot right in it, don't we? And we try to get things right again, best we can. And this is the picture that I get as I read this account of this woman here. And Jesus, as he always was, he sees this situation and he takes it in hand and he says to the woman at the end that her sins are forgiven. Oh, what words, brothers and sisters, we would want to hear. She was forgiven. Verse 47 and 49. Wherefore I say unto thee, talking to the Pharisee, her sins, which are many, are forgiven, for she loved much. But to whom little is forgiven, the same loveth little. And he said unto her, thy sins are forgiven. Oh, how she must have drunk those words in. How we, brothers and sisters, long to hear those words said to us. Thy sins are forgiven. Matthew chapter 7. Here is the principle, brothers and sisters. It's in verse 12. Wherefore all that you would that men would do to you, do ye likewise to them. And think about that, brothers and sisters. You can imagine the sort of thing that you would like your brethren and sisters and other people to do to you. Because you know what you want, and you know the sort of attitude and the sort of thing that you would like people to show towards you. So all it's a question of doing is reversing that around and doing even so to them. And the thing is, you know, we can do it. If only we would take the time to think it out first and think, what would I like my brothers and sisters to be like to me? And we turn that around and put it into action, and we are like that to other people. And I think there's a connection with what follows in verse 13 and 14, where we're told about the narrow way that leads to life and the broad way that leads to destruction. And surely there is a warning here for us, because that broad way and that wide gate that many go into, that's the selfish road. And you know, brothers and sisters, that's one of our biggest problems, is the fact that we are basically selfish. The Bible uses the word fleshly, but that's what we are. We are basically selfish creatures. Our instincts, or whatever it is, our concerns for ourselves, take command. And we go down the broad way, which I call the selfish road. It's a very narrow road, but leads to life. And it's the road of love that we must walk along. And so as we think about these things, brothers and sisters, there's a point where we come to realize perhaps that love is a thing that we're not born with, naturally speaking. It's something that we've got to develop in our life, and we've got to learn to love. And if you go away from here this morning with just that one thought, I must learn to love, it will carry us through and help us. I must learn to love. And how do we learn this? Well, we do what we've come to do this morning. We look unto Jesus. We look at our Master and we see one who was full of grace and truth. He wasn't half full of grace and half full of truth, but he was full of both. And that's how we must be, brothers and sisters, full of grace and truth, or try to be. And so he says to us, in the words of Matthew 11, no need to look it up, you know it very well, come unto me, all ye that labour and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn of me. Or perhaps, as it should be, learn from me. For I am meek and lowly of heart. And that's how we've got to be. And you will find rest to your souls. There's no doubt about it. He says, if you come and learn from me, you will find rest for your souls. And there is, brothers and sisters, a peace of mind that comes if we know within our hearts, yes, I love my brethren and sisters. I want to do what's right. It might not always look that way. We can be misunderstood. That happens. But if in our hearts we know that we really do love our brethren and sisters, we want to try to do what we can for them. We want to do to them as we hope they would do to us if the situation was reversed. Then there is that peace of mind. We find rest to our souls. And as he says, my yoke is easy and my burden is light. His commandments are not grievous. See the connection. So, brothers and sisters, we want to learn to love. Turning now to 2 Corinthians and chapter 13. We come to the point with that background exhortation to ask ourselves a question, don't we? When the disciples were gathered with the Lord for that Last Supper, Jesus said, somebody here is going to betray me. And everybody in the room asked themselves a question. And they said, is it I? Is it me? Am I going to betray my Lord? And so 2 Corinthians 13 perhaps introduces us to this idea that we should examine yourselves, whether you be in the faith. Prove your own selves how that Jesus Christ is in you. Yes, brothers and sisters, Jesus Christ in us, the hope of glory, he calls it in another place. And so we examine ourselves and realize, brethren and sisters, that as we are about to partake of this bread, we are declaring ourselves to be members of his body. Because we are. He tells us that. The body is not one member, but many. And we are the body of Christ. And we are declaring that as we partake of that bread, because it enters into us and we become part of that one loaf. And as the body of Christ, we must manifest love. We shall take the wine and we shall drink that wine which symbolizes to us his poured out blood. It symbolizes more than just that. It is a life poured out, because the life is in the blood. And so we must manifest the life of Jesus in our mortal flesh. And that's what manifesting this love is all about, that we talk about. It's doing as Jesus would do, because he came and showed us love. He was full of grace and truth. And we must, brethren and sisters, have Christ in us. Unless, Paul says, we are reprobates. But he says, I trust that ye shall know that we're not reprobates. And so we look to Jesus, who gave himself. And this Jesus who gave himself will be in us to the extent that we do likewise in giving ourselves. Brothers and sisters, may we each be strengthened to love much, because if we love much, as Jesus says, we may be forgiven much. And our thanks go out to him who has made this possible through the sacrifice of his only beloved Son.